It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All righty then. Welcome to Money for Lunch. Hey, I'm excited. I've been doing a lot of stuff, setting up some things in and around the Los Angeles area. We're going to be out there filming. So by all means, come out and check us out in 14th, 15th, 13th, 14th, 15th are the current dates. We're going to be talking to people like Boss Rutan, Mike O'Hearn, some other stars that I'm going to keep under wraps as a surprise, right? Anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. So I will keep you up to date on what is happening in Los Angeles. Also going to be shooting live in Miami in September. So if you're going to be in Miami, let me know and we'll hook you up. So Miami, shooting live in Miami in September, and then I'm going to be shooting in LA as well. So a lot of fun stuff happening. Okay, so real quick, I wanted to talk about this. I think this is amazingly important. I wanted to talk about what it takes to become rich, to become a millionaire, to have a successful business. You know, and it's really funny because getting rich and becoming a millionaire is almost kind of like a weird taboo topic, right? And just saying that you should go after it makes you kind of an outsider, right? So by the time I was, I want to say 28, I had reached the level, the status of, you know, of a millionaire, right? So I'm making some very good profit. I have some good real estate here and there, and life is great. So I want to kind of give you these tips and these strategies, if you will, for how you can reach your goals, right? And I think it's very important that you start off with a very clear objective. You have to know what it is you want. You must absolutely know what it is you want. Who are you going to help? How are you going to trade value, your value for money? And it's just critically important. I cannot emphasize this enough. You have to be passionate about what you do. You have to love what you do. So that would be step number one, is finding out what it is you want to do, something that brings you joy and fulfillment, regardless of the money. If you do it just for the money, I think it's very difficult to be happy with that. So, you know, follow your passion and be good at that, right? Have a plan on how, you know, what you're going to do for the people you're going to serve. The other thing is immediately start saving to invest. All right. I don't care if it's $5 a month or, you know, $500 a month. Immediately start saving money to invest, and invest in things like real estate, in stocks that pay you a dividend. Coca-Cola is one of my all-time favorite stocks. And I tell you what I do now. So I invest in EFTs like Dogs of the Dow and Spider. All right. Check with your professional on these. I invest in these. And then I also follow Warren Buffett. If Warren Buffett owns a stock, I'll either buy it I usually end up buying it
if it's a stock that I really understand. Okay, if it's a company I understand, warrants following it, buying it, I'm going to probably buy it. Don't show off. Show up. You know, I got stuck in this trap where I used to show off quite a bit. And it is probably cost me a lot of money, a lot of time, but a lot of energy to keep up pretenses. And it's far better to be known for your results, right? Because people can tell. So don't show off, show up. Work your butt off. Be known for your results, for your work ethic, for your commitment, for your word, for your keeping your promises. As the more successful I've become, the less I feel it necessary for me to buy some of these luxury items. To this day, I don't really own what most people consider a luxury car. And back when I was young and dumb, you know, I had a limousine and a driver and all that other stuff. All right, so be passionate, save to invest sooner than later. Don't show off, show up. The other thing is that I want you to be aware of is that there are two types of debt. So you want to avoid debt that doesn't pay you. A good example, again, is a car. So you buy a car and you're in debt. You know, you buy a, I don't care if it's a $50,000 car or a $150,000 car. It's not going to make any money. One of my favorite lessons that I learned from Robert Kiyosaki was his explanation of what an asset is. A lot of people will say, hey, you have a nice car, you have a nice house. Those are assets. Robert Kiyosaki taught me that an asset makes you money. And if it's not making you money, it's a liability. And that to me is a very clear example, a clear strategy, a clear way of looking at your debt. So if you buy, you know, $150,000 widget and it makes you money, good. You're in debt for the right reason. If you're in debt and it's not going to make you money, then I would avoid it. And that is the difference between, you know, debt that pays and debt that doesn't pay. So do I have debt today? Yes. And I look to acquire more debt in the sense of real estate. And I'm trying to think what other debt. I think it's the only debt I have primarily is real estate. Anything else I try to avoid. Just remember that. Money doesn't sleep, right? You've seen that movie, or maybe you heard the movie with Kirk Douglas, Money Doesn't Sleep. One of the things that has helped me a lot is creating assets that doesn't sleep. Courses, books, things that produce money while I'm sleeping. If you don't already have it, you know, maybe you ought to consider having a course or three or five. These assets are just like creating, it's just like having a real estate. It pays you dividends. It pays you money. It pays you rent 24/7. So you create it once and then it pays and it pays and it pays and it pays. So think about that. Money doesn't sleep. What can you create that can make you money while you sleep, right? The other thing that probably helped me the most is getting a mentor. And I was fortunate enough to be able to get multiple mentors, Dr. Joe Vitale, Bill Bartman. These are some of my favorite people that I've gotten to know and I've gotten to be mentored by. There was a local guy in Houston, Texas, and he was probably the first millionaire that I knew. And he was, was a great mentor. And taught me quite a bit about money. Anyway, so get yourself a mentor or two. Preferably, I like to get a combination of mentors, and you can get them through books. You can get them by going to seminars, buying audios, doing courses, but also get yourself out of your comfort zone and go help a millionaire. And this is what I mean. A lot of millionaires out there, a lot of very successful people, always have a product that they're working on. Maybe it's a charity. And this is one of the best, fastest ways to get connected with these guys. Help them with their charity. Don't ask for anything until you've delivered a lot of value, a lot of value. Let's see. Then the other thing, and I think, and I learned this, speaking of mentors, is from Grant Cardone. Grant Cardone wrote a book called The 10X Rule. And I certainly would advise you to get it. If you haven't gotten it, read it, buy the audio, listen to it multiple times. And the single biggest thing that the 10X rule taught me, and it's certainly one of the biggest mistakes that I've made, was not thinking big enough. So the 10X rule says, go for 10 times the amount. And I've heard Grant Cardone talk about this. So you go for 10 times the amount. So if you're going for a dollar, you're shooting for $10. If you want a million, you shoot for 10 million. And maybe you hit 5 million, maybe you hit 2 million, maybe you hit 10 million, whatever. But 10 times the amount, 10 times the effort, 10 times the time that it's going to take you. So if you think you can get there in 3 months, it'll probably take you 30. I know that's a little disappointing, but just start factoring those timetables in differently. Because that's one of the biggest mistakes that we all make. Certainly one that I'm guilty of is not planning enough time, not working hard enough, and not making my goal exciting enough or big enough. And if you keep these in mind, then you will absolutely guarantee your success. I think the number one thing that stops us from going big, from achieving success on any level, is our fear. You know, when you're starting to look at buying a house for yourself personally, sometimes the money involved, you're buying your first house and it's, you know, whatever it is, $250,000, $300,000, $500,000, that can be scary. Once you've done it two or three or four times, it's not so bad. When you are asking for the money, you're talking to a client and you're asking that client for money, it's the first time, that can be a little scary. But once you've done it four or five or 10 times, it's not so bad. So fear is that thing that controls us all. And I don't care whether you're Donald Duck or Donald Trump, we have fear that we have to deal with. And my next guest, we're going to talk a little bit about fear. My next guest is Whitney Nicely. Whitney Nicely went from no investment or strategies to 19 houses, 19 apartment units, and 7 chunks of land in less than 3 years, all bringing monthly money to her bank account on autopilot. She has traveled the United States, speaking on stages, teaching her simple strategies, and meeting with other successful real estate investors, and still buying houses the way she teaches others. Whitney Nicely, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You bet, you bet. You know what, I was just talking about fear and how fear really is the big obstacle that a lot of us have to deal with. Here you are, you went from no investment strategy, no know-how, I guess, to buying houses, buying apartment units, buying raw land. There had to be a time where you had to deal with fear. Talk about
this. You know, my mom is like every good Southern mom, and she taught me that there were some bad words out there, and most of them have four letters, and fear was on the list that she taught me. You shouldn't say it, you shouldn't use it, you shouldn't go with it, because it leads you nowhere. And so I'm the kind of person that I'm going to do it and I'm going to figure it out as we go. I'm not going to analyze it and crunch the numbers and find out six different ways that it will fail. I'm going to do it and figure out how it's going to succeed. And maybe I just ignore my fear. Maybe I tell it to shut up. I don't know. But I don't dwell on it very well at all.
You don't feed it.
I don't. No, absolutely. And I don't like fail either. I think that's another bad F word. I think foreclosure is the nastiest F word in our language. Because it just doesn't have to happen. And you don't have to fail, and you don't have to fear failure.
Right. And well, you know, I think sometimes failure is unavoidable, because there's just sometimes that, you know, I don't care who you are, you're going to hit that thing called failure, but it doesn't have to be the end of it, right? Now, I agree with you about the fear thing, but look, no matter who you are, I was talking about this the other day. You look at Ronda Rousey, MMA champion. She's still an MMA champion. She went 12-0, so she went 12-0, had this perfect career. Unfortunately, she hit failure. She got knocked out. She lost her last two matches after. So she's 12 out of 14. She's won 12 out of 14. That's still a champion. It's still fantastic, but she did hit failure. So I think failure is unavoidable. It's going to happen sooner or later. You're going to make a mistake. The question is, does it stop you? Did you learn from it? And back to what you said, you cannot fear it. You just got to go for it.
Yeah. I mean, I've had some deals that I didn't close. I've had some deals that went sideways on me, but it made my next deal better. It made my even next deal even better, you know, because it's not a fail and quit kind of situation. It's a fail to pick it up and keep going.
Right. All right. So tell us a little bit about your story. Where were you when you started your real estate business? Here you are again. You had not done this before. You didn't have any strategy. I'm assuming you had millions of dollars saved up.
No, I didn't. But I did have a mom who, again, was always teaching me something. And she's always been around. So I thought everybody grew up with money coming to their mailbox every month. Like, I remember going to the mailbox, getting checks out, and being like, hey, they paid. No big deal. And then when I got into my 20s, I was like, wait a second, where's my mailbox money? And my mom was like, you have to buy something first. But I was in my 20s, and so all my money went everywhere except my savings account and real estate investments. So I didn't start with a whole lot of money. One of my first deals was a raw piece of land, just trees and grass. It's zoned industrial in the city of Knoxville, and I paid $15 for $250 a month. So like in 6 months, I pretty much had all my money back in my investment. And I was like, you know what? Now I got $250 a month coming in. Let's see if I can do even better.
Right.
I started renting out. Oh.
I was going to say, back up a little bit because we had a little interference. Mm-hmm. So you bought this a raw piece of land in, what did you say it was at? Knoxville?
Yes, in the city of Knoxville. And it's zoned industrial.
Okay. And you rented it out? What did you do with it?
I rented the driveway, just the driveway, for $250 a month.
Oh, that's funny. I don't even know what that means. You rented the driveway. So you have a raw piece of land, but somebody rented the driveway?
Yeah. He couldn't get to the back side of his land unless he used my driveway. So I told him I was going to put a gate up unless he paid me money.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. I love it. So you bought this piece of land, and all of a sudden it's cash flowing $250. And that was your very first real estate venture.
Yes. And, you know, I tell everybody when they want to get started, start small. You can buy land for $1,000, $2,000, and then you don't have your entire life savings wrapped up if it goes bad. You know, this one's actually going really good. So I rent the driveway for $250, and I did that for 2 or 3 years until I found somebody to rent the land. So now I have the driveway and the land rented. The land rents for $500 a month. So every other month I get my full investment back. That's cash flow.
Wow. Yeah, that is
no overhead, no building, no plumbing. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big fan of those kind of real estate deals. I love parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are some of my favorites. For the same reason, you know, you just make sure that it's, you know, you just got to take care of the parking lot, which is, you know, very low maintenance, but there's no plumbing, there's no heating, there's no electricity. It's just a parking lot, man. I love it.
People say money doesn't grow on trees, but I don't think that's true. If you own the trees and you can rent them, money comes from trees.
All right. So how old were you when you bought your first piece of property?
27. And I don't know about you, but I knew everything when I was 27.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, especially when you hit a home run.
I'm 32 now, and I really think I've got it figured out.
You know, especially when you're making money, you know, like that, yeah, off your first deal, that really helps boost the old ego. It sounds to me like your mom was a great mentor. Sounds,
yes,
like she really helped you in this direction. Go ahead.
Well, she gave me the idea that I wanted to be a real estate investor, but my mom is from the old, slow, boring way of investing, where you get a chunk of money, you go buy whatever you can find, and you rent it out, and whenever it pays you back, fine. She's just throwing spaghetti on the wall and hoping something sticks.
Gotcha. And how do you do it?
And, you know, well, I've got, you know, I don't want to be too fancy, but I've got some formulas. I've got some strategies. I've got a couple different plans that I use, and I know when to pivot and change. My mom also gets married to the property. She doesn't like to sell anything. I'll sell something in a heartbeat. I'd rather rent it, but I'll sell it. And I'll also branch out. My mom's got like a 1 mile radius when she wants to buy everything there. I don't care if it makes money. I'll buy something 30 miles away. I'll buy something in a different state. I don't care. I'm not attached to it like she is.
Right. And I think in exactly what you said, you have the two schools there. Your mom, mm-hmm, definitely reminds me of my first real estate mentor, who, he did a 5 mile radius. He never sold any of his real estate.
Mm-mm.
And he, you know, he just did everything very local. My second real estate mentor was the opposite. These two guys, mm-hmm, were about the same age, but he was very much about, you know, being creative, doing the deal, doesn't matter how he would, you know, he was the first guy. This is, you know, really before the internet, but he would buy deals over the phone. He would just go to the county recorder's office, find out what it was, you know, and go off those records, using the tax appraisal, and he would buy deals based on that. And he also had a formula, but he, you know, he would sell it, he would rent it, he would cash and carry, you know, whatever. I mean, he was very flexible when it came to real estate.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I really treat it like inventory. It's just a thing. It's just a house. It's just an apartment. It's not where I'm living and breathing. And even my house, you know, my papa told me that if you didn't marry it or give birth to it, you can sell it. And I believe that. Anything and everything's for sale all the time, unless I'm, you know, really married to it.
All right. So.
And sometimes
right now,
I would sell my husband.
Well, I tell you what, I have five kids, and on more than one occasion, I certainly would have sold one or two of them. Okay, let's talk about this, because right now, real estate is an all-time high. It seems like we have crazy prices again. How do you find and buy in this kind of market? I mean, are there still deals to be had, or are you turning down a bunch? You know, what's your take?
So I've bought three houses this year because I'm kind of in a waiting pattern right now. But the three houses I bought, I paid cash for them, which breaks most people's rules. But the first one I paid $2,500, the second one was $3,000, and the third one was $5,500.
Wait. So you bought a house for $5,500?
Is this a fixer-upper? Yeah.
That was the expensive one out of that three. So tell us about these houses. How did you buy a house for $5,500?
Well, they're all crack houses, which means that when you're standing inside, if you can get inside, you can see outside through the cracks in the floor and the cracks in the wall and the cracks. I mean, they're like an egg. They're cracked.
Right. Okay. All right. Definitely, fixer-uppers. Are these tear downs?
I'm not going to fix them up. I'm not going to tear them down. I'll let the termites carry them off before I touch them. I have two of them I've never even been in. And the third one, I wish I hadn't gone in.
All right. So give us your strategy. You bought these houses. They're dilapidated. You can't live in them. What's the strategy? Are you just holding on to them until somebody says, hey, I want to buy it?
I sold one of them already. The one that I got for $3,000, I sold it for a lease contract for $12,000.
Nice.
So I made $9,000 and didn't spend any of my own money because the people that moved in gave me $5,000 to move in, and I gave three of it to my seller. So I made money when I bought a house.
I love it. Okay, cool.
They still owe me $7,000. So I used, the other $2,000 that I made off that one and put it towards the $2,500 house. So I'm $500 into another house. And what I'm going to do with this second one is put a big bandit sign in front, kind of like a billboard that says, hey, I buy houses like this. Y'all call me if you got one.
Nice. I love it.
And the third one that I got, it's probably a $20,000 or $30,000, maybe even a $40,000 house fixed up, but I'm definitely going to sell it for $20,000 on a lease option. Somebody gives me $500, $1,000 to move in, pays me $400 or $500 a month. I'll have all my money back in like a year, and they'll still owe me $15,000-$20,000.
Yes. I love it. I love doing deals like that. It's great. I mean, talk about mailbox money for the next,
it's
like
fun,
you said, 15.
But, you know, it's little dinky deals, and they're kind of fun. But, you know, I like the bigger ones. I like the ones where I can go into a $100,000 or $200,000 house and still help somebody and get $20,000 or $30,000 up front when I paid out nothing than getting, little – $5,000 or $10,000 move-in fees. You know, I'm not crazy. I'm just lazy.
Right. Well, what's the old saying? Don't work harder, work smarter.
Be the bank. Don't go to the bank. Be the bank.
Be the bank. I love it. Okay, so what city are these houses in?
Most of my houses are in Knoxville, Tennessee, and East Tennessee, but my husband lives in Rome, Georgia. So the three that I bought this year, you know, I was just hanging out, and I'm basically a glorified stay-at-home housewife who buys houses. So I was just hanging out and accidentally bought these three in Rome, Georgia this year. I'll tell you, two of them, I was just talking to the guy that cuts our grass, and I was like, hey, you know anybody with some houses they don't want? And he was like, yeah, I've got 13. How many do you want?
Wow.
Okay, well, I'll take two. Which ones are empty?
Right.
It's kind of like playing cards. Lots of people have houses that they just don't want. And if you'll start flapping your mouth and telling people that you buy houses, you'll find a lot of deals. But if you walk around saying there's no deals, they can't find anything, you're not going to find anything.
Right. Well, you know what? The next thing I want to talk about is creativity, and I want to start us off with this. My second mentor, Alan, him and I were looking at buying this building, and it had been sitting empty for a few months. It was downtown. I think it was sitting empty for 7 or 8 months. Anyway, so we go to the bank, and of course, we don't want to guarantee the deal, and the bank turns us down.
Mm.
Well, for most of us, that would have been the end of the deal.
Yep.
And Alan, for whatever reason, had this intuition, and he went to our real estate agent and asked them to verify who owns the land. And it came down that the bank owned the building, but there was two partners who owned the land. And so we ended up buying the land from the two partners, and then we went back to the bank and said, guess what? We own the land. Now control your building. I'm saying this because there's so many ways of being creative as far as getting a deal done. Back to what you were saying.
Yep.
If you're going around saying it can't be done, I don't have any money, it's, you know, things are too hard, then you can't ever find a deal. But
right.
If you have a different mindset, then you can be very creative. I want you to maybe talk about some of your creativity when it comes to financing real estate deals.
So I really focus on the people, all right, because real estate's just sticks and bricks. Like, it's not that big of a deal. We overcomplicate it. When you can find a person and you can talk to a person and you can find out what's wrong with them and then you can solve their problem, your pipeline will be so full you're going to hire people to help you. It's all about the people. The real estate is just a product. It's just the inventory. It's the physical thing that you can go and touch. It's the people. We're in the people business. So I help people get in front of the right sellers. If you're talking to the right sellers, again, you're going to be busy all day long. But if you talk to the wrong people and they keep telling you no, 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 then you're going to come back to me and say, Whitney, it doesn't work. Well, you're talking to the wrong people. So I really focus on tired landlords, people that are tired of dealing with toilets and tenants. You know, they either thought they wanted to, they thought they wanted to go buy a couple rental houses and then it didn't work out, or maybe they inherited a rental house and they're not cut out to be a landlord. Everybody's not cut out for it, but
right.
It's also the easiest way to make money. I mean, you wake up and money's in your account.
Right.
So, you know, whatever.
Landlords. I want to interject this. I like what you said there about tired or exhausted landlords, because let me tell you, when I first got started and I had my wife and I had one house, it wasn't a lot of fun, right? I mean, we were making a couple $100 a month, but it wasn't a lot of fun for the $200, right? And and then we got to the point where we had a couple of houses, and that was a little bit more fun. But if you happen to be a landlord and you're a landlord who's, let's say, you're tired of the process because you only have that one property, or for whatever reason you become disenchanted with the business, that's a perfect person to buy from. And you were talking about it being a people business. It's true. People will do business with people that they like, know, and trust, and real estate's no exception to that. I mean, people will probably – you know, somebody might be able to sell their house out in the public market and get the price they're looking for. But if they like you enough, and maybe your story resonates with them, maybe they'll finance the deal for you for the next couple of 2 or 3 years just because they like you. Things like that happen all the time. Anyway, you were about to talk about retired landlords.
Well, a lot of people know that when they pass, their kids are going to be terrible landlords. And so they want to just set their kids up to get money and no headaches.
Mm.
Well, that's perfect for me. You know, I'm buying my friends' inheritances. And they're financing me for 10 and 15 years, not just two or three. They'll give you 10 or 15 years. Other people that, you know, maybe you got transferred and you had to leave. And so you've got this empty house. You don't want to rent it because you don't want this ball and chain back where you used to live. But you don't want to make payments on an empty house either. Well, I'll come through, and I'm basically a glorified professional tenant who's not going to give you any headaches, and I'll take over your payments for you.
I love it. Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
I was just going to say
that this goes back to being creative. And and it's not, you know what, and not everybody is going to appreciate your creativity, and that's okay. Just focus on the ones who say yes or possibly or maybe. And the ones that say no, don't, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, fine. You figure it out. Make those payments. I don't care.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, on more than one occasion, I have made offers to people on, you know, on different deals where they said no, and a month or two or three later, they call me back up and say, hey, are you still interested? Because they've had enough.
Yes, I am. Exactly.
Yes.
And that's about their pain. And sometimes time solves everything. You know, people want to get in and do it real fast. Well, sometimes you have to plant a seed and wait on the harvest.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Group of people that I like to talk to are people that inherited properties. And maybe, you know, mom and pa grew up, they paid off the house back in the 70s or 80s, they never updated it, and you know, the kids moved off and moved to Atlanta or New York or something. And they're not going to go back to Timbuktu, you know, small town America, and deal with this house. So they just call me and I give them a cash offer, or I give them a payment structure. You know, a lot of older people are on fixed incomes, and if they sell a house, they get it, you know, bumped out their tax bracket, they screw up the pension. So instead of doing that, I'll just send you a couple hundred, maybe $500 a month, which won't really affect your, you know, strategy here. It'll just make your life better. And we'll set it up so that when you pass, it just starts going to junior, no problems. People love that. They like to know that there's a plan and that everything's taken care of and tied up with a bow.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. You know, let's talk about this. In the beginning of the show, we were talking about failure. Sometimes failure is not avoidable. Have you had some real estate failures? Have you lost some money on real estate deals?
Well, going back to when I thought I was buying every little piece of land I could find, I went to the county tax sale and I bought some land. I spent $500 on it and I was ecstatic. And I ran up to the lady at the end of the counter. I was so excited to write her that check. And I was talking and I was, you know, I checked it all out and I was so, so, so excited. And somebody standing next to me, a gentleman, chuckled and laughed and said, that thing's been up for like 8 years. Nobody bought it. I can't believe you actually paid for it. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, babe, you bought 3 acres under the lake. I was like,
you bought what? Wait, back up. You bought 3 acres under
the lake. Like I bought the lake bottom. When I was doing my research, I missed a 1 for a 7 or a 7 for a 1 or something. The same person owned this lot, but what I thought I was buying was like 15 acres overlooking the lake, like on the mountaintop.
Right.
And I bought 3 acres under the lake. No grass, no trees, no nothing. But, you know, I always say that I'm going to make lemonade out of it. I'm going to get some old houseboat and put a big pink Whitney Bob's Lake Houses sign on it. Call it advertising and be okay with it. Or, you know, I'll just annoy my neighbors enough that they give me $1,000 to go away.
Oh, man. That is amazing. You know, and it's amazing that that stuff was even for sale.
Yeah, it's some kind of loophole. This is like the only lake on the TVA, like, string of lakes where you can do this. And I didn't know the rules because, you know, I just thought I was doing so great and I knew so much and everything was great. Thanks, you get excited, you make mistakes. It was a $500 lesson, but I've turned it into a great talking point. People love to hear my real estate stories at cocktail parties.
Sure. Absolutely. Hey, how do you know, how to buy a lake?
Just the bottom. One of my neighbors owns an island. Yeah, she owns an island, so I think I might connect with her and see if I could buy her island. You can't get to it on the lake. You have to take a John boat out, but, you know, whatever. It'd be cool to have my own island.
Sure. Yeah, man. Richard Branson has his own island. You'd be in a nice little club.
Totally different plan there. But yeah, mine's like big enough for his tent, whereas his is like, you know, amazing.
Sure.
But I did,
sure.
I bought a house one time, and I did actually. There was an auction, and I love auctions. I'm an auction addict. I even have an auctioneer's license. I love them so much. And I saw a house, and it was bidding at the right price. I thought every house had to be worth at least $15,000, which I found out since then is not true.
Whitney? All right, we're having a little technical difficulty there, and hopefully she'll be calling us right back here. And we're going to be talking more about investing in real estate when Whitney nicely comes back. Here she is. So let's go. Okay. There you are.
I got to talking too fast.
No problem. No problem. Okay. So last thing I heard was you were at this auction.
Mm-hmm.
And then you love auctions.
I didn't actually.
Go ahead.
And I didn't actually see the house. I was just at the auction. My brother went to see it, and he was like, please don't buy it. Please don't buy it. Please don't buy it. And I was like, no. I'm going to buy it. So I did. And then after the auction, I went over to the house with my brother, and I didn't know what a cat house was, but something was living in this house and fleas were breeding on it.
Oh.
It was disgusting. Like, I've never been attacked by fleas like I was that day. And as I was walking through, the carpet was squishy and you could, like, see the water just squirting out of it as you walked on the floor. So for the next 2 months, I tried everything I could think of to do owner, rental, and I didn't even know what those words meant at the time. I was just trying to figure out how I was going to get out of this situation. Ended up, I put it back up for auction, and the high bid the second time was $11,000. But it was in a terrible part of town, and I was so glad to, you know, technically lose that $4,000. But I didn't get mugged or kidnapped or raped or anything else. And we only lost $4,000. It wasn't $40 or $400. And it was definitely a lesson to walk the property, go in the house before you buy it. Which, you know, then again, I bought three this year and didn't look at them. So apparently I don't listen to my own lessons.
Well, you know what? But it's like you said, there's a difference when you buy a house for, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 versus, you know, 10 or 15 or 20.
Yeah.
And especially, look, if you could buy three houses for under $10,000, chances are you're going to be okay. You could probably afford to lose money. Yeah. Now, I tell you, one of the places that I have gotten some good housing deals at is by contacting bail bond agent, because these guys get houses all the time, but you got to evict people. There's legal work. There's just a bunch of, and sometimes you can get a house for $5,000 or less. I picked up two houses. Total price for both houses were, I think, $4,000. And we got two houses, flipped them immediately and made just a, I think we made, 12 or 13 times our investment, and it was an awesome deal. So if there's a tip for our audience and for everybody else out there that if you contact your local bailsman, these guys have real estate that they don't know how to unload.
I'm on it.
You'll love it. You'll love it. And
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, people put up their houses and then their kids run off, or the person they put up a house up runs off. And these are highly motivated people. They want to keep their house. And kind of a nice little strategy there. Let's talk about this. As you mentioned a couple of times, you're a glorified stay-at-home mom.
you know, do you think that a real estate portfolio should be something that all women strive to have?
Oh, absolutely. Two reasons for that, too, is statistically, we're going to outlive our mates. Mm-hmm. And I know personally, I spend more money than my husband. So if I'm going to live longer and spend more money, I need to have more money coming in. And the only way to do that without getting another job, and I already have, you know, 18 unpaid jobs, the only way to do that is to have rental money coming in every month. You just wake up and there's more money in your bank. Sweet. Thank you.
Yeah.
I also think that, you know, a lot of women just let their husbands, even today in 2017, they just let their husbands do all the money. They let their husbands do all the investments, and they say, no, it's just too complicated. My poor little woman brain can't process that. And I want to smack the fire out of those women because they are just as smart, and they're going to end up with something, and they're not going to know how to manage it. Somebody else is going to come through, give them a bad offer, and they're going to take it because they're not going to know what else to do. It's really, really easy, and it's really, really fun. But you got to get going, and you got to practice with training wheels until you can take off and start buying your own stuff. The true taste of freedom for a woman is a little bit of money in her own pocket.
Mm. And I think that's
applicable. I don't think it was Mae West. Dorothy Parker.
Dorothy Parker. And I think that's applicable to all of us. I mean, look,
for
yes,
sure.
We should all have some freedom. And the thing about it is, look, let's say that you're a school teacher and you love being a school teacher. So maybe over the next 5 or 10 years, you buy 2 or 3 or 4 houses. You know, you're setting yourself up for an awesome retirement.
Absolutely. I mean, you should be able to buy a house every month, even in a hot market, because there's still people that are falling through the cracks. There's still stale listings out there. There's still lots of people that didn't even hit the MLS but still want to sell something.
Mm.
It's the only way that you're really going to be able to afford retirement. Because if you save up $100,000, $200,000, $500,000 to retire on, and you go to a nursing home and it's $10,000 a month, that means you've got how many months that you can afford to live. Unless you figure out how to bring in $10,000 fresh dollars every single month.
Right. Right.
In your spare time.
And I'll take it one step further. Let's just say that you have, you know, you've amassed $500,000. That's great. Congratulations. And let's say that you never get sick. But unless you have money coming in, $500,000, even at $50,000 a year, you only have 10 years worth of living.
Yep.
How
are you going to be old and then go back to living off an allowance like a child? You can only spend so much money, or you're going to outspend this month's allowance. No, no.
Right. Let me ask you this. What about a real estate license? As far as you know, do we need a real estate license in certain states, or are we good to go on our own?
No, anybody can buy a house. Anybody can sell a house. The only time you need a real estate license is when you want to represent other people buying and selling houses. If you want to do it yourself, you don't need a license for that. And everything I learned in regular real estate school did not help me buy houses. It helped me pass the exam. It helped me know the laws. But it didn't help me write a contract, and it didn't help me make an offer.
Interesting. And it probably didn't help you find deals. It probably didn't help you be creative.
No. All that stuff comes after the accredited continuing education.
Yeah, I love that. Whitney, nicely, it's been so much fun having you on the show. Looking forward to having you back again another time so we can talk more about investing in real estate, finding deals, and making money, mailbox money on real estate. Whitney, nicely, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Whitney, nicely, from good old Georgia. Good stuff there. A lot of great strategies, a lot of great tips on how you can make a killing in the real estate market. But you know what? If you go back to what she said, start off small, do a couple of small deals, get your feet wet, right? And as I said earlier, Find a mentor. There's a mentor for everything out there. There's probably an online course that can teach you some of this stuff. And sooner or later, you got to ignore your fear. You got to just pull the trigger and do it. And that's it, man. And I think that once you buy your first deal or two or three, you'll be hooked. You'll find out that it's not that hard and it's a lot of fun. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.